this morning for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on May 20th. If the audience would join the board for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
That takes us to public comment number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Consideration of minutes from 5:13.
Move approval.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Any corrections or additions? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The minutes have been approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval. I submit it.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. Consideration of claims.
I get my coin out.
No, this one's a little different. Normally, I would not vote to approve something like this because it's substantial, but I'm so excited that a huge majority of the funds we're spending this month are going to pay off the Justice Center. Very cool, Wayne, that a project that really got going when you first got here, we're getting it paid off now, and so I'll move approval of claims.
Second.
A motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Claims have been approved. Consent agenda, and we need to add utility permit 1446.
1446. Move approval with noted change.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot. Aye. The consent agenda has been approved. Public hearing items. Consideration of Chapter 32 road identification address numbering system, Story County Code of Ordinance. Charlie.
Good morning.
This is our third.
Yes, third consideration. So if the board takes action to approve it today, we will publish the new ordinance on next Thursday, the 29th, and the effective date will be May 30th, Friday.
You heard anything from anybody?
Nothing to add.
We'll open the public hearing. If anybody has any comments to make on this matter, this would be the time. And not seeing anybody move toward the mic, I'll close the public hearing and turn to the board.
Move approval of third and final consideration of the road identification and addressing numbering system in Chapter 32.
Second.
Motion to second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That ordinance is approved. Additional items. Discussion on economic development process and policies. Leanne Harder. Andrew Camp.
Andrew.
I asked Drew to come up and sit with me because he's really been in the communities, and he worked extensively with communities last year as they were going through the first round of applications. The reason I'm bringing this to you is to seek some guidance for staff as to what, if any, changes you would like to see occur to the economic development process and policies. I've actually had several communities either through Drew or directly to me ask, is the county going to do this again? When is the deadline? What kind of funding? What are the requirements, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I did have a couple cities ask that we consider moving the deadline up sooner rather than later, like a month to July 1st rather than August 1st. And from staff's perspective, that would be a much better approach, too. That would give us additional time to review it. So what's before you right now is how it is. Staff would ask that we have a discussion today as to what if any, changes were to be considered, and then bring that forward to you next week for consideration.
First, maybe you'll get to it between you and Drew a little bit, but can you just maybe highlight just one or two of the conversations you had with some of the local communities in terms of its overall impact? They obviously have some opinion. Do they see some areas again that we possibly need to address based on your input? I guess I'd be more interested in knowing, you know, some of that type of feedback.
Definitely. I've heard from several communities, you know, for example, Slater, Ziering, Roland, Colo, a lot of them have asked me about them. The ones with They've asked about, you know, what kind of projects will be getting funded again. When's it going to be open again? When's it going to be due again? Is there going to be a match? You know, just kind of ask me questions. I couldn't answer many of them because I didn't want to mislead them or provide any misinformation. So I just kind of said, you know, that's something that the board's going to take up here in the near future. And they were just really excited about the option of it because I know that they have projects in mind, especially like Shelley up at Zeering. They're really trying to renovate the main street up there, and she's really passionate about trying to get all the facades done up like they've done with New Cara and some of those other businesses up there on Main Street. So that's just one example. Then I've talked to Scott Burka and Colo about using it for some projects they have in town. So, and then Slater, too, because they missed out on it last year, and they really wanted to make sure they were able to get that this year. So those are some of the communities, for example. There's other communities as well, but those are, you know, just three examples that come to mind of people asking about them and wanting to know when they're going to be available because they had ideas on how to use them.
So I guess a larger question for the board to ponder today as you go forward in your discussions, is this a program you want to keep forward into this coming fall? It's on the books as a program. And we don't need to discuss funding availability. I think we need to get the framework in place so that as Drew reaches out to communities and or I reach out to communities and then Drew works with them, the expectations are set. Last year we told them as we met we'd like to see some match from the communities, and we kind of roughly looked at 25%. But that's not clearly defined. And I think the more we can put in the policies and establish counties' expectations, the better products we get in the end. And with that, any questions for either?
Yeah, I've got two areas I'd like. First thing I would say is I believe it was this board's intention that this would be an ongoing program. Now, the fact that it's a program does not mean necessarily that this board is going to award anything on any given year. There may be years that either projects don't come forward that meet what this board feels like it should meet, or that from just based on funding, it doesn't make sense for us to do anything. That said, it seems to me that in practice last year, we would have liked to have had an additional month in the process. So moving that initial deadline from August 1st to July 1st may make some sense. And the second thing is, in practice, we did in fact settle closely on a 25% match as being part of what we actually did. So whether that needs to become part of the policy or put in as a note, just so that we can tell these municipalities, give them as much information as we possibly can about what the process looks like. And then again, I want to reiterate, at the end of the day, any board that's sitting here is going to have the authority to make decisions on any applications that come forward. So these are really just a set of guiding principles that any board will deal with.
Well, again, and it reaffirms the vision that we talked about as to expand the economic development outreach into our smaller communities, realizing that many of them didn't have the FTEs or manpower or persons that could guide them through this process. And from all indication that I've received, I think it met our expectations and exceeded it in many ways. And yeah, I think, the suggestions that I think I call it skin in the game. I think anytime communities are willing to take on an initiative but are also willing to have some local match, I think that speaks volumes, and it also I think it's an easier sale when you look at it from a countywide perspective. Now, there may be circumstances in certain situations that could present a challenge if there was a major need. So I wouldn't want us to necessarily say that if they can't do it because of hardship reasons or other reasons that we couldn't work out some type of extension. Now, how that would be done, I don't know yet. But I do think that we ought to have that expectation in place for a lot of these communities. And then we would continue to work with them to see what challenges they might have if it's a timing issue. You see where I'm coming from? Yeah.
I think it's been a popular program. I've received a lot of good feedback from the smaller communities, and I think was a goal of this board when this board was seated that we wanted to see if we could possibly do more to assist some of the smaller communities in the county. So, and as far as having, like Wayne said, skin in the game, I think that's important. But I think we also need to realize that at some point we may get to a project sure. or something that may come up, and the city may not be able to do that. And I don't necessarily think it needs to be a hard and fast policy, but I certainly think it's a guideline that we would look to in the future on any of these projects that we look at.
So I think putting guidelines out there, as long as it's completely understood that the sitting supervisors are the ultimate authority in this,
right.
and the guidelines simply should guide those decisions.
Clear as a bell.
That some language guidelines requiring a match from the community and possibly put in the 25%, but then have the flexibility language built in, and then also amending the application deadline, maybe bumping it up a month or looking at like the first Tuesday of the month, whatever is appropriate to do.
Yep.
Okay. We'll bring it back next Tuesday.
Okay.
Good. We don't have anything else going on next Tuesday, so that's a perfect date. That was sarcastic. Okay.
it could be. This would be probably the quicker of the items.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, agency reports, juvenile court, Shirley Faircloth. Good morning, Shirley. Good morning.
It's always a good day when Shirley comes to see us.
Always. I think you all have a copy of the report. Usually I hand deliver it, and I actually got it out last week. So I'd like to start first with the county budget and give an update, since that's certainly your primary responsibility. Also like to kind of correlate that with where we're at statewide, because they obviously intermingle and the impact on the services that we can provide to the community. So the impact of the closing of the juvenile home impacted at the specific time that it closed two Story County residents. One was a delinquency client. The other one was a child in need of assistance. Juvenile court services received the final bill just last week on May 14th. The final bill was $21,145.33, which put the line item in the red by $14,895.62. This is a state mandated expense. We will be possibly under budget in the protective living line item, which is also a state mandated expense for detention costs, but it's really hard to predict how many we may have going into detention between now and the end of the fiscal year, but that may be a possibility of where we could shift some dollars. One thing that juvenile court certainly continues to be and will be contacting legislative bodies who are in support of a state training school for delinquent girls. Currently, there's not an equal level of care for the girls as there is for the boys. And when I talk about impact specifically to Story County, we do have one resident that is out of state that could have certainly potentially been treated if we had that level of care within the state, and a couple possibilities as we look that we've kind of got on the radar. We are trying to keep track of that so that we'll have specific data of which clients may have been able to be eligible for those services if they were available within the state. Currently, we're other than the line item for the juvenile home, which we're over budget, we are at or under budget in the remaining line items. I expect that they will be drawn down to a zero balance, with the exception of the vehicle fuels and maintenance. We will use that vehicle more with community service projects as summer gets out and the weather finally is warmer. Walked in with some people this morning. I was like, it's just so nice out here finally. Juvenile court continues to monitor the use of shelter outside of Rosedale. As you are all aware, you support Rosedale so that we are able to provide services to families, and I can give you specific examples of where there may have been some conflict within the home, and we're able to provide services without having to charge those individuals and be able to sort that out. We've had some clients that have some mental health issues that being able to have that benefit here in Story, which we do not have in other counties, is a huge benefit to families, that we can gives us the time to sort out what services services need to be provided, and what is the best angle to go? Is that a delinquency case, or is that a child that need an assistance case, or is that a mental health case? So I really, truly appreciate that, and our officers really are aware of what a blessing that is to have that, and it's really only because of the support that you give through the funding for those dollars. I did break down this time what Department of Human Services had utilized for shelters outside of Story County, and that was $17,813.79. And that's an area I'll continue to explore. We, through juvenile court, use shelters outside of Rosedale, and there are certainly reasons for that, whether you have two co-defendants that are same, or you have a victim of in one case and a perpetrator in another. It could be that there's a history of running and that sometimes it's just too close to home, and so we need to look at safety issues and concerns. But that's something that I want to pursue with Department of Human Services and talk about some of the reasons. Was that shelter was full at the time, or was that because there was extenuating circumstances, and that's why we looked at that. Story County's mandated expense for medical services totaled $10,599.02, and that is medical services when clients are at Central Iowa Detention. So Title 19 is not an option at that point in time. That would take legislative change, something that we may want to look at, but I've been trying to track those dollars separately so that we know what that impact is to your budget. As you are aware, our office was restored to full staffing back in January of 2013, and we do have 3.5 juvenile court officers that serve Story County needs. Our half person serves both Story and Boone County. It's not just that they're short in stature like myself. We are splitting up those counties. We also partner with Ames Community School District, and we have a full-time school liaison officer at the Ames High School and a part-time school liaison officer at the middle school. They come to staffings weekly with our office, and we're able to really work hand-in-hand and make sure that services are followed through. For the state budget, we do anticipate that funding will remain approximately the same. We don't have those final numbers yet, and they'll vary a little bit depending on the final population count, but we would assume that we're going to be able to maintain the services that we have at this point. The funding from the state does go, most of that comes from the child welfare budget. Graduated sanctions and court-ordered services are mainly where those dollars are spent. We really look at targeting community safety as our number one priority, and then rehabilitation services for delinquent kids and their families. We have opened up a number of the programs that we fund to the community. Some of those are functional family therapy, which is a 12-week program, and we've let schools know, Department of Human Services know, that they can access those services, and we'll continue to really collaborate with other agencies to be able to provide the most services for those dollars available. Current placements for juvenile court cases, we've got 3 that are in the state training school, 1 in detention, 5 in shelter, 10 in residential treatment, so that would be group home settings throughout the state, and 2 that are in enhanced supervision, and that they're in, it would be a community-based treatment, but we've got trackers that would be checking in on clients in the evenings, weekends, those hours that were typically not open for business. Average caseload at this point is approximately 25 clients. That obviously is a moving target depending on referrals, how they come in.
What's a reasonable number?
That would be reasonable, and that is much lower compared to what we had. We were running 35-40, so this would be reasonable. I talked a little bit about functional family therapy that we do have available in Story County. Other programs that are funded through juvenile court services or community service work sites. We do have both supervised and unsupervised sites, obviously just paying for those supervised sites. Restitution programs, so a client can be eligible to work off restitution that's owed to victims. That money goes directly to the victims and is paid off or worked off at the rate of $7 an hour. We do have a cap of $500 on that. We have tracking and monitoring programs, so individuals that are going out, seeing our clients face-to-face in those evenings and weekend hours that are moderate to high risk. And then we also have a weekend offender program that really provides 2 days of skill development, community service, education, life skill group, and that's you're picked up a Friday night and returned home Sunday night. One program is at Rabner's in Fort Dodge for the boys, and the girls is at Quakerdale in New Providence. We also use electronic monitoring for our moderate and high-risk kids, which is the GPS unit, so that we can track whereabouts of clients. And we also have a variety of diversion programs, some of which you help fund through the programs with youth and shelter services, such as alcohol education programs. But we also have a shoplifting program, anger management class, and fire safety. One of the programs through DCAT that we're looking at is we have a recurring theme of seeing an increase in families and clients that are really impacted by mental health issues and looking at providing more mental health services within the school for Story County residents. That RFP has not been selected, but we should have that up and running. It's anticipated by the beginning of the school year. And then I've attached just a copy of the chart with the complaints that we've received through April 30th. I've broken that down by gender and age.
Shirley, I don't know if you're able to comment. Rumors was that the state trained school might be closing or becoming privatized. Or is there any information? I don't know if this came out of the legislature. I know there was mentioned that some legislators were looking at making some possible changes. Have you heard any more about that?
I have not. I certainly have read some of those in the paper. I don't know if that's a follow-up similar to what happened with the Iowa Juvenile Home.
I think it may have some connection to that.
I have not heard anything formally.
Yeah, if something comes up, if there's going to be public input hearings or anything regarding something like that, please let us know. I know I've worked in years past on committees that I've been on with representatives from the state training school, so I'm really familiar with the programs and services that they offer, but I just thought that that was a very effective alternative for some of the young people that we serve, and I'm just kind of curious as to a lot of the background, the rationale as to why, you know, felt it was necessary to do that. I figured it might be, again, a cost savings. The state, if they privatize it, or but I didn't think they wanted to close it down completely. So just more information if something comes up that I could have. I'd appreciate it.
I will certainly keep you posted. I certainly believe that we have a definite need for a state training school, both for males and females.
Thanks, Shirley.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Thank you for your work.
Next, University Community Child Care. Penny Pepper.
EP.
A Penny.
Hi there. Hi there. Well, I'm finding it hard to believe that it's been almost a year since I was here before. We've done a lot of the same things that we usually do. We have full day care for infants, toddlers, and preschoolers, and they were full throughout the year. We have full day year round. I want to say 12-month care for them. And then we have two preschool groups, one half-day, one all-day, and they meet during the school year, so they're just getting ready to wind down. And then as soon as public school's out, we'll have two groups of school-age kids in their rooms instead. So there's always something going on. Rooms don't stay empty. Speaking of which, we have the comfort zone, which you've been supporting for the last few years, and that is during the school year as well. And that becomes an overflow space or a little small group project room for the school-age kids in the summer. So every space is used that we do have. We're hoping to spend a huge amount of time outside again. soon, and hopefully the summer will cooperate and it won't be as hot some of the time as it has been. But anyway, that's the child care life. You want to get outside, breathe outdoors, and stay healthy. We have between 90 and 100 children at any given time, 24 permanent staff of teachers. We have two registered nurses that job share in the comfort zone. We have a full-time person with the food program. We have office support staff and then the assistant director and myself. In addition to the permanent staff, we typically have between 25 and 30 university students working for us too. And they are primarily eligible for the College Work Study Program, so we get them at a great bargain. We get a huge value for what we put into that. The center receives funding from ASSET, which supports the reduced fees for ISU student families who have incomes below 225% of poverty. But then we also get money and in-kind services from ISU. The building that we have is rent-free. The ISU Department of Residence also provides funding, and that's used to cover some of our occupancy expenses. We don't get this money directly, but we get the benefit of a federal program that ISU has called the ISU Campus Grant, which supports child care fees for Pell Grant eligible student families. This comes in a four-year block of time, and one four-year block is just ending, and the grant was secured again for another 4 years, and with any luck, it will be a greater amount of money. I mean, that was what was proposed. Now you just got to wait and see what happens with the budget. But we had 57 children participating in that over the last year, and that means that 40%, they only pay 40% of the monthly rate, so it's a huge, huge, huge savings for them. Then we get funding from the USDA for the meal program, which is what the public schools do. Boost provides scholarships for preschool children, and we just got one of the mini grants that they offer for improved program improvements, and we already have applied for a state quality rating systems rating, and we're used the money to help do some things for that, and now we're just waiting to find out what's going to happen with our application. So hopefully I will have something to share that's wonderful next year with that. And then we also work with the Ames School District because we are one of the sites for the statewide voluntary preschool program for four-year-olds. And we had 9 children this past year. The families that participate in that get 10 free hours of preschool a week. So again, that's a really good savings for our student families. When I looked at the 2012-13 statistics, we had 213 children throughout the year. 111 had ISU student parents. 99 were Ames residents. And then we did have 3 that live outside Story County, which we don't share with, I mean, you don't do anything for, but one was a UCC staff child, and then a couple are children of ISU employees. The client income levels for the 2012-13 year, we had 59 below 200% of poverty, and then, of course, 41 that were over that. We had 73 of those children have fees, at least in part, paid by either Department of Human Services, the ISU Campus Grant, the Boost Scholarship, or the Statewide Voluntary Preschool Fund. So that's a significant number, I would say. As far as strengths go, UCC remains accredited by the National Association for the Education of Young Children, and we're good to go with that through October 2016. So really soon, we'll start getting the things out and getting our application ready to be reaccredited. We have a lot of staff taking advantage of continuing education, such as what the Child Care Resource and Referral provides. We also have 2 staff people right now that have something called a TEACH, capital T-E-A-C-H, scholarship, and that's through the Iowa Association for the Education of Young Children, and that's a work and go to school program. They are working full time for us and taking 9 to 12 credits a school year to get either an associate's degree or a bachelor's degree in early childhood education. The way we support that, the center's part, is to give them release time for studying every week. And another strength I would like to share is that we do, out of the 24 permanent staff we have four right now that have worked between 2 to 5 years, two from 5 to 10 years, but we also have six that have been there greater than 10 years. And, you know, I don't know what y'all know about child care, but that's huge to have, you know, a core group of people that, that stay for such a long time. And that's what allows us to maintain the quality, achieve and maintain the quality that we have.
So out of 24, you've got six of them that are really long-term.
Mm-hmm.
That's really good.
It is. And, you know, we don't... Great. So there are definitely other reasons that they're there.
Yeah, but having a quarter of your workforce that's mm-hmm. long term, I mean, that gives you an opportunity to be consistent.
It does. And then when new people come in with less experience, they've got those wonderful people.
Sure, but those people also bring new ideas and new energy, and so it seems to me there's a nice synergy that can go on as long as you're able to keep that core group.
That's right. So we work really hard on that. And then we have the university students coming in too, which is also a really good thing for everybody that works there. The weaknesses that I'd say we had, I mean, I hate to share weaknesses, but infant and toddler care continues to have a pretty lengthy waiting list. We can only do so much with 12 spaces for babies. And typically we'll have 100 and 150 families on the list. You get a bunch of them off. You make calls when spaces are open, and then boom,
they just keep coming along, don't they?
They just keep having more babies and coming to us, so that's all good. And then the other difficulty then is balancing the affordability with what you can do to pay staff as appropriately as possible. And then I have just a couple things. I like to share with you some of the quotes that parents give me in the surveys that we do when we're preparing the asset budget. We ask them what having the child care, what difference that makes for them, and how it helps them. I can continue my work without worrying about my baby and the financial burden. It makes a significant difference. Our child would not be in care if not for the low student rate. It allowed me to focus more on my work and not to have to take several part-time jobs to make ends meet. I was able to go to class. Affordable rates made it possible. And then these are from the comfort zone. What would they have done if the comfort zone hadn't been there? They'd have taken off work without pay. One young woman would have missed student teaching for the day or two. Another would have missed work and a very important meeting and deadline, missed class and work, and missed important assignments. So the comfort zone is really valuable on so many levels. But Ames being such a transient community, folks don't have extended family to help them out and this as much, and this can be really helpful. So...
Well, I think you already touched on the one question I had, and I was going to ask about a potential waiting list. And then you mentioned particularly in the age group and the young infants and so forth. But with the growth of the university still continuing to expand, do you see this as an ongoing challenge for you? We're going to just not – we can only cover so many people with the staffing you have. Are there alternatives being talked about through collaboration with the university to meet some of the expected needs? I know.
There's only informal conversation that I'm aware of, but it is, you know, something that's discussed, the campus child care facilities or that the university supports can no way meet what they anticipate. So I would say they're looking to see what options there are.
Yeah. It's an important piece in trying to help break the cycle of poverty, Wayne.
It is. No question.
P- Penny, my question is, I think along the same lines as Wayne, as you look out over the next year and 2 years, what concerns do you see? What threats are out there? Clearly, funding would have to be the first thing that you would look at, but we seem to be in a fairly stable time right now of funding. What do you see?
This may seem weird, but when the economic times get better, it's difficult, more difficult for us to recruit staff. And over the last six months especially, we've kind of hit a bump, which I find very... It's just sad that the, you know, Story County employment is so low that folks have more option, or they've got a job. They're not looking. So that's something that we're really struggling with right now. The TEACH program that I told you about also has a scholarship for folks that want to get something called a Child Development Associate Credential. It's essentially a one-year program. There are 12 credits that you have to take at DMAC, and then there's a portfolio of information you get ready and send to a national professional organization, and then someone comes to observe. As we anticipate or look at maybe hiring people that are some less qualified, I am thinking we're going to try to shoot them in, you know, into
sure.
This
I mean,
program.
It was almost an apprentice program.
It is
what it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's outstanding.
Mm-hmm. The last two people I hired don't have education in early childhood. They do have another bachelor's degree, and they both said they're, you know, we made this a condition of employment. They accepted, so we'll be getting them started with that this summer so they can get going in the fall.
How elaborate is the portfolio? I mean, 12 credit hours does not seem excessive to me.
No, it's not. I haven't gotten completely up to speed on that, but I did just find there's a video on the IAEYC website that really details what needs to happen. So I'll be looking at that.
Well, I'll be interested to hear how that goes.
Yep. Yep.
Hopefully I'll have really good news to share about that next year.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be here before you know it.
Thank you very much.
Yep, thank you so much for what you do. Mm-hmm.
No departmental reports. Other reports. Discussion for improving the audio equipment in the Board of Supervisors public meeting room. That horse has got whip marks all over it, Barbara.
There's a couple items that we just can't seem to get to the end of.
I'm going to say this one's been off and on, now it's back on, and I just want to make sure that we're going in the right direction. And I brought Dave Miller with me. He's our new IT administrator.
Hi, Dave.
Life. This is what Dave did for a living, so I thought he'd be the perfect one to answer any technical questions you have. And we prepared a nice little PowerPoint. And we're going to talk about the boardroom audio and or visual updates. And Paul and I have talked about this on a couple occasions, and I guess we never did get a list of requirements. Paul just made it clear that we need to improve the audio in this room. So that's what option one is our audio refresh. And the system that we currently have is 9 years old. And as you all know, as things age, as with our microwave towers we talked about yesterday, it's harder to get parts, and it's harder for them to accommodate the newer things that are coming out, like Wi-Fi and VoIP technology. So our first option would provide us with audio updates only. We'd use the same system that we have, and we'd include two drop-down microphones and buy a different submixer that the microphones plug into. One of the problems we run into with this room is that the heating and cooling is in the ceiling. What these microphones will do, they will drop down below that, and we had someone come in with a meter, and he measured the noise level, and we think this is a good solution to kind of alleviate some of the external noise. These are also where Lucy sits. You can control the off-on for those, so if somebody in the audience is speaking, that can be turned on. If people are coughing, it'll be off, so it won't pick up that kind of a noise. But we figured for the size of the room, two of those, one on each side, would benefit what we want to do. And then we have option two, which of course is a little more money. What this would do also would replace and update the current system. We still have two microphones, but with this solution, we could add more if we felt it was needed. We would replace the audio mixer equipment that we already have. We'd replace the projector on the ceiling. That is very old, too, and if you recall, we just had to replace the bulb for the first time a couple months ago, and it was almost $1,000 just for the bulb, $900 and something. So it would replace that, and then we'd have two video cameras, which would be stationary, probably in the back of the room, pointing in opposite corners to cover the entire room. And then it would also include the little video mixer, and we kind of have a picture of the setup. If you want more detail on that, I'll have Dave explain that to you. And maybe we can talk about that later. And then our third option would be replace everything. We've looked at a couple different companies. We've actually had three companies come in and look at the boardroom. We've only received a quote back from one because most of them shake their head and say no. So the third company came back with an estimate of $55,000 to $65,000 to replace everything that we have. And we would get two microphones, three video cameras, and a new projector.
So that's an additional camera. What else is different about this one than option two?
It's a more involved video setup.
Okay.
Does this one give us the HDMI capability? What we'll be able to do with this is we can network the system, so it can be like a regular laptop online. We'll also have wireless access, so we can access. I won't have to use a laptop to present my PowerPoint. I could run it from my desk if I needed to. And also, it would connect with the phone, so you could do Skype via your new equipment, things like that.
Barb, my question when I look at that cost and the third option, and I go back several years ago when we first started investigating audio and video capabilities, it seemed like that cost was way up in the thousands of dollars. I'm curious what has happened over the last several years that we can expand and have these things at such a price.
Well, I'm not sure what you were looking at before, but as you know, like, for instance, with the cost of computers, as technology improves, they also find cost savings and ways to streamline things. So a lot of technology has come down in price. Cutting edge is still up there, but I don't know the difference between $1,000 and this price. I don't know what you were looking
at. Well, I don't have the exact figures in mind, but I know we actually went down and visited a place down in West Des Moines in Urbandale, and they had an elaborate setup, and, you know, we looked at several different options, and really the cost is what prevented us from moving much further than what we currently had at the present time. And that's why when I saw that, I said, you know, that looks awful good to me.
Oh, no. But one thing maybe that included, and I'll go to the next slide, with the things you have to keep in mind. Now, what we've quoted is materials, hardware. As we improve the system, who will operate it? Will Shelley feel comfortable taking notes during the meeting and also operate the system? Probably not.
Have a little gadget up here.
Yes, there would be a lot more gadgets. And then if we capture video, where would it be stored? Video takes up a lot of space. We'd have to buy some kind of, and I'm sure your system probably included a networking device that stored the video.
It did. And now that I see where you're going. That's one of the reasons that I think the cost was so high.
Yeah, so these would be add-ons. And then how would we share the video? How would people, I mean, right now they can go to our website and listen to the audio, but how would they see the video? For one, they'd have to have a really good connection at home because it's slow. Would we store it on YouTube? If we did that, it's not ours anymore. It can be used by anybody they want. Dave suggested Channel 16 public access. Do we burn it to a DV and get it to them? There's a lot of work involved with that. Civic Plus could host it for us. However, we're almost at capacity for our data storage now. We'd have to purchase more, and they lease it to us at a great cost. HostGator has some options, too, or other web-based services. So those are all things we have to think about as well. And then if we did add more things other than option one, where would we store it? There's not a lot of room over where Lucy's sitting. And with option three, there would be a lot of equipment. We don't have a networking closet in this room. Now there is a facilities closet behind this room that we could share. But those are all things that we need to think of when we're selecting an option. So my question to you is, option one, option two, or option three? I feel comfortable pursuing any one of them. However, as you've heard from other vendors, there's not a lot of time left in this fiscal year to get anything done. We can purchase the hardware, but getting it installed, everybody's booked up through the summer. So,
well, how critical, and I hate to dominate here a little bit in my thought process, but how critical have we evaluated the actual deficiencies of what we're trying to do in this facility? Now, one of the biggest things that I saw an advantage of when we hold meetings, staff meetings, our regional governing board, having to drop down microphones, having the capabilities of recording that, could speak volumes for that area. But right now, we can't really do that. And so I guess one of the questions that I have in mind, and Paul, you've said you probably have had some discussion. What do you see are really the shortcomings for how we operate right now, and how much more will that do to provide access to the public as to the various meetings and things that we're holding now? And I'm speaking of planning and development. I'm speaking of environmental health, all the other meetings that we would have, you know, here in this area. I don't know.
My personal and professional opinion would be I don't see a need for video. I think we can get what we need from audio. I think we need to improve the audio aspects of this room. Video brings its own host of problems. Now, we are talking about a system. If we do add the speakers this year and add the mixer, we've got a 9-year-old system that within the next several years we're going to have to replace, but the microphones will work with other systems. So, you know, in my opinion, option one for our current needs would be the option to go with. When you go in, I've seen a lot of meetings videotaped. I don't think it necessarily adds and maybe detracts from the message people are trying to make.
I haven't heard a large outcry from people that are disappointed that they can't flip on their TV and watch our meetings, or they can't
sure.
go.
That's because I have a face for radio.
But I have said all along that, especially during public hearings, and we've got one coming up here next week that's going to draw a crowd, if we could have a system that would enable people to simply either stand up where they're at, or not even have to stand up and speak what they have to say and be recorded without having to get up and come to a microphone someplace, because I think a lot of times that intimidates people to a certain,
yes,
a certain
it does.
Extent. And I would be really reluctant to spend $25,000 or $30,000 on a system, because all it's going to do is put more burden on the clerk, and we've
or somebody else
or somebody right. else. And,
absolutely,
and
but it's still burden.
It's clear that Shelley or whoever's sitting at that desk is not going to be able to do both functions.
Right.
And I think if we can improve the audio to a point where people in the audience can say their piece and not have to get up and physically come to a microphone, I think that. For me, that would do a lot, and I think we do more than a lot of counties do. A lot of guys I talk to, they don't record their meetings at all. They have a clerk that keeps the minutes, and if you want to read the minutes, you read them the next week after they've been approved, and that's it.
Exactly.
Or you come
true.
To the meeting if you want to see what's going on. So.
And I think it improves the attendance at meetings if they know they're going to be videotaped. Some people really have an aversion to that. And even if they did come to the meeting, they may not speak. So I think adding just the audio feature, improving what we have, would be my recommendation, if you all agree.
Well, our responsibility is benefit to the public. And so we've got to weigh dollars spent against potential public benefit. And to me, it's not the $25,000 to $60,000 that we're talking about spending. We can find a way to spend that. It's that ongoing cost that is always going to be more. I mean, we've seen this time and again. It's always more than we project to have personnel to run the system, to try to store everything, to try to get it up where it's in a usable format. I mean, the cost there. Well, Barb, we see that coming out of IT again and again and again, where we think it's going to be one thing, and then we find out a vendor, no, there's another add-on you got to have, and there's something else. And to me, and I was a huge proponent of video in these meetings. I believe our responsibility is to be open and transparent, and I believe we're achieving that now. By putting the audio, I think we took the action to get the audio put up where it was easily accessible. I don't think that was true when we came on as a board together. I think we're doing that now. I think anybody who wants to know what's going on here with the Board of Supervisors, they have access to it. Now, they don't get to see us. I've got on a pretty green tie today. Nobody gets to see the pretty green tie. I don't see public benefit in right. knowing that I have on a green tie today, rising to the level of the dollars we'd have to spend, and not even the initial. It's the ongoing dollars that really scare me. Seems to me that if we can relatively easily add to a system that is rapidly approaching being out of date with something that can be usable with our next system, whatever that is, that makes a lot of sense. And Wayne, I completely agree with you. The value in being able to record our staff meetings in here without passing around a wireless microphone and things like that. Being able to have a public meeting like we're going to have next week where everybody gets their opportunity in as painless a way as possible to get up and say their piece, that makes a lot of sense to me. So I think I would be more in line with option one. Now, I'm going to want to understand that, in fact, those microphones will do what we need them to do, and they will be able to adapt to whatever our next system is whenever that happens. But that, to me, seems to be the most prudent course of action for us at this point.
Now, let me just ask, have we had any conversation with City of Nevada in terms of their system and its advantages, disadvantages? Has it increased anything as far as, you know, public outreach, communication? Do you know at all, Lynn? You live in this community. No broadcast. Yeah. Lynn, you got to understand part of where this is going. You know, I understand a new iPad's going to be coming out soon.
Yeah, when Barb said iPad, she had Clint. We were going.
No, but.
I saw his eyes light.
But all seriously, I guess. You know, a lot of places you see, and they you see some elaborate setups there, and as far as the board and things of this nature. But I think it goes more than just the board. It's really how is it going to benefit the public in terms of understanding what's happening and things of this nature. And then I do have some concern again with our ability to store and keep records of various things and how long we would keep those and what the cost is associated with that. But I do think we need to start be thinking and taking some incremental steps to improve what we currently have.
And the other thought about audio or video, excuse me, is your audience. And even if you were to put that on a disc and get it to the AIM so they could put it on the public access channel, a lot of people in the unincorporated areas and the small towns aren't served by Mediacom. And a lot of people that use a satellite dish wouldn't have access to that. And if you put it on the website, if I try to sit home and watch it, it's not going to work. I mean,
be very disappointed.
I'm supposed to have DSL service. It's more my daughter's size is more like 1990s dial-up is about what it's gotten to.
Sure.
So it wouldn't be practical for somebody, I think, to try to sit at home and watch it be streamed on a website. So,
and it would probably increase calls to either the board or IT saying, hey, I can't watch this, you need to fix it, when really, you know, you can't control the network connection on the other end. So
we thought we were going to get a little traction on the broadband this year, but that didn't.
Yes, we thought so, but it's
that's the discussion for another time.
Yeah.
So I think we're in agreement. This isn't necessarily an action item, but it should probably come back to the board as such.
Okay.
But I think it looks like we're in agreement for option one. If you'd want to research that, make sure you have all your information, and then it can come back to us as an action item, and we can take action on it at that
time. Okay. That sounds good. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks.
Thanks for your help.
Welcome aboard.
Yeah, glad you're here.
Have you? Came from a good background, you know. Being a former teacher in Ames School District, you know I have
a soft spot in your heart.
Soft spot for people that's, you know, been there.
liaison assignments and committee meetings. Wayne.
Nothing to report. Okay.
Pass.
Pass also. Public forum number two. Comments from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meetings law, but may do so in the future. And not see anybody moving to the mic. Announcements from the supervisor.
Just to mention that we didn't have a quorum at our regional governance board. We did have the main item dealing with the 28E and the revision. So currently we are anticipating a conference call 8:15 on next Tuesday, hopefully in order to at least get a vote from all the members on that. So, but other than that, everything else went wrong quite well.
Wayne, can you update us on where you stand on the consultant? I've been following some emails back and forth, and it looks like somebody's coming in.
Yes,
early
right.
June.
And we have a date and set aside. It was reported informally with no action taken at that time. There have been communication with Ron and staff getting the documentation that was necessary. I think the date's June. I've got it written down. I think
it feels like it's 10
Wednesday.
Through 12.
Yeah, 10 through 12. Something. And I think I'm currently planning to represent the board in some of those meetings, maybe more than one, but I know I thought that they seem to be very comfortable with what is being requested, and certainly Ron and Lucy's been gracious enough to allow, you know, her new hire to help out where needed to get this information.
You for that,
so really do appreciate that help as well.
Well, it looks to me like you guys identified a good group to come in and
right.
provide the report.
Right.
Can you help me? Has there been discussions on how their report will flow? I would assume since it's the region that hired them, the report will flow back through the region.
Correct.
But I would hope since it's our CLP
right.
in Story
right.
County that we would also get the report.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That will, that is part of the whole arrangement.
Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just anybody who's coming next week, pack a lunch.
Good idea. I don't have anything. I'll take a motion for adjournment.
So moved. Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.